Good morning. What a treat to have you on the program, Claudia. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Hi, Angela. How are you going?
I'm very well. Now, firstly, how does your family celebrate Chinese New Year?
Well, first of all, we let somebody else do the cooking because you don't want to get involved in all those many, many dishes. So it's a bit like Christmas for us. The whole family gets together. We have friends and go to a really, really good Chinese restaurant and get them to do a huge banquet for everybody. And it's got to include a noodle dish because that signifies long life.
And are there presents involved, or is it more about food and family and friends?
Exactly. It's more about food and family and friends, although the older members of the family do give the younger ones or unmarried ones a little red packet or a lacy, which has a little bit of money inside. And my mother always used to say to me, you know, when I said, you know, why have I got $5 in a red packet, Mum? She said, don't spend it. It's so that you'll always have a foundation. You'll always have a basis.
What a lovely tradition. And I know from travelling in Asia at this time of the year, everyone heads home wherever you are. It's a huge travelling time.
It is. It's Hong Kong just about shuts down. It's a national holiday all over the world, except in Australia.
Well, we're right there. We're very much aware of all of this. Now, tell us, the Year of the Dragon, what sorts of things can we expect in 2012, Claudia?
Well, the dragon is the ultimate imperial symbol, and he's the symbol of the emperor. So it's a very important year for Chinese. And if you're lucky enough to be born in the Year of the Dragon, it's going to be a year of good fortune, of course, new beginnings. And it's a great year if you're considering starting a new business or you want to engage in marriage. This is the time to do it. It's going to be a very flamboyant, optimistic year.
That sounds good. Anything we have to take particular care with this year?
Well, I'm concerned in a tiny way because there's the water dragon. It's the year of the water dragon. And we've not had a great deal of luck with water in Australia in the past couple of years. So I'm hoping that it means good things for water in that it has abundant rainfall and not flood.
Right, so, just getting that balance. That. Not too much, but not too little either.
That's it. So watch out for the water dragon.
Now, as people would know, here in the central western inland New South Wales, we've got some fascinating Chinese history going back to the early goldfields era. I understand your own family had similar connections. When did they first come to Australia?
Well, we go back a long way. Both of my great-grandparents came to Australia during the gold rushes. Now, one of them we've definitely been able to pin down as coming in 1860, so it's right in the thick of it, and the other one around the same time. So our roots go back a very, very long way.
Certainly. And whereabouts in the goldfields, which part do they head for?
We think it's Victoria. I've been talking to lots and lots of old uncles and aunties, and they're going, you know, well, there's nothing written down, but they think it was Victoria. And Victoria at this time was booming, absolutely. You know, the towns that popped up, you know, Bendigo, Beechworth, were really, really riding on the wealth that was coming through the gold. And the Chinese arrived and it was, hello, who are these people? So it was quite difficult for them at first because they, not only did they look different and they couldn't speak the language, but here they were, these almost alien people arriving into a very, very Anglo-Saxon environment and then doing their own thing and, you know, using old finds that others had walked away from and actually finding gold there. So the Europeans were really quite suspicious of the Chinese at that time.
And I can't help wondering, you know, you hear stories, you know, tracing Australia's history and the Chinese people who didn't do so well at that time, you know, copping a lot of racism. Do you know much about how tough life was for your family?
Not exactly for my family, but understanding what was happening to other Chinese people at the time, I would imagine that it was pretty similar in that there was a great deal of persecution. Even the Victorian government, followed by the New South Wales government, put a tax on Chinese people coming into Australia at that time to make it really, really difficult for them because they really weren't that welcome. And then what the Chinese used to do was they go, oh, well, there's no tax in Adelaide, so we'll go to Adelaide and walk across to Victoria to avoid the tax. And this really was part of quite an ugly period in Australian history where it was really laid the foundation for the White Australia policy. But things got better, of course, after that.
Was there any talk of anyone making a fortune, Claudia?
Well, our people weren't that good at doing gold, apparently, so they became market gardeners, and they were very, very good at that. In fact, one of my great-grandfathers had a company that supplied the shipping lines, and it was down in Circular Quay, and apparently the around the time of the Second World War, the American Navy were in town, and they got to supply all of the goodies for the American Navy.
Wow, interesting. What fascinating family history. My guest this morning, Claudia Chan Shaw. You might know her from The Collectors on the ABC TV. Now, also, of course, you're a well-known fashion designer. It seems it runs in the family. Tell us about your grandmother's children's wear boutique.
Well, my grandmother, this is my mum's mum, and she was born in Castlereagh Street, so you don't get any more downtown Sydney than that. So she was born in Sydney, and then the family took her back to China, and then she came back again to Sydney when she was about 14 and did the fashion course at East Sydney Tech. Now, you know, you talk about these days Alex Perry and people like that coming out of East Sydney Tech and having these fantastic businesses. My grandmother was really virtually one of the first fashion students to go through that time, so she'd do courses and millinery and, you know, beautiful hand-detailed work. And this she put into her business, and that was a little children's wear boutique called Little Shirley. And it was called Little Shirley because this is the height of Shirley Temple fever in the 1930s. And she even gave my mother the middle name of Shirley, which Mum hated. But, so Little Shirley is this gorgeous little children's wear boutique chosen because of its proximity to the Crown Street Women's Hospital. So Grandma thought, you know, well, you've got all these pregnant women going there and they're going to have babies, so they'll need their christening robes, they'll need their beautiful little velveteen dresses with the smocking and handmade flowers. And so she started a business there. And when my mum used to come home from school, she would go to the shop and make little embroidered decorations to go on my grandmother's designs.
How lovely. So, I mean, of course, your mum, Vivian Chan Shaw, a very well-known fashion designer herself. Do you think that that came from those early years sitting in the store?
I think so, because Mum says that she'd go into the store, and even she learned how to be a buyer as a child, because my grandmother would take her on the buying expeditions to buy toys and little bits and pieces and novelties for the store. And she'd say to Vivian, well, you're a child, what are kids like? And so Vivian would do the buying, and she loved buying wholesale, and that's something that she's passed on to me. So, you know, I've become a buyer and a designer and love buying wholesale as well. But she used to string up a couple of lights under the stairs, and Vivian would sit there making these little flowers. And I didn't really make the connection until I started researching my talk more in depth that this is exactly what I was doing when I was a kid. I'd come in after high school into my mother's shop, sit there after work, wait for her to finish, do the book work, talk to the ladies and tell them, darling, it's you, you look fabulous. And so I think it's just in the blood, and you want to be part of that lovely, intimate business that your grandmother and your mother set up.
What a lovely, you know, three generations of women working in this beautiful, you know, in the fashion industry in various ways. Did you feel like you had much of a choice, Claudia, about your career options when you were young?
Well, I actually never wanted to be in fashion. I didn't really want to be a designer. When I was before I realised I was hopeless in maths and science, I wanted to be a doctor. And then when I was at art college, I deliberately didn't do the fashion course because I thought, oh, I don't want to do frocks. Frocks are in the family. I don't want to do that. And I did a BA in visual communication design, so photography, film, graphic design, and I thought probably I'd end up in a career in television, which is funnily enough. And I deliberately avoided it, but because I'd been going in after school, working every school holidays in the store and really learning the business from the ground up, when I graduated, my mother said to me, okay, what are you going to do? Am I going to lose you, or I'll offer you a partnership in the business because you have been working with me? And I thought a partnership sounded very good. So I joined the business.
It came back around, and to the point where, you know, you've spent many years building the Vivian Chan Shaw fashion label.
That's right. When I was about to start my second year of art college, Vivian said, you know, well, so many people have been saying to us, your designs, your handmade knitwear is so very, very different you should be selling overseas. And you know, people always tell you how you should run your business and what you should do because they have this great wisdom. But Vivian said, well, you know what? I think we should go conquer America. So I was just about to enroll in second year of college, and I thought, no, I'm going to. So I deferred college for a year and really got stuck into the business at that time. And Mum and I went across America from San Francisco on the West Coast, finishing in New York several weeks later, door knocking into boutiques and selling the label as we went. And we ended up with an agent on 7th Avenue in New York.
Claudia, I can't help thinking, wondering what your early, the first family who came to Australia in those goldfields in the 1860s and the struggles they had. I can't help thinking, wondering what they think about your success and the changes over those generations for your family.
Yeah, I think they'd probably sit back and go, yes, we would have expected this because we're all hard workers. And there's no laziness in the family, and it's a real, you know, go-get 'em attitude. So I think they think that was a natural progression of people coming to start something from nothing and to make a success of it.
Now, just to reflect, with Chinese New Year next Monday, in what ways do you think Australia's rich Chinese history and heritages help shape life as we know it in this country, both in the cities but also in regional areas?
I think because the Chinese have been here for so very long, they were one of the first obviously immigrant groups who came to Australia, because, you know, you had your English and your Irish, but they all looked European. You had these people who looked very, very different arriving, dressed differently, totally different customs. And they were had a really, really hard time in the beginning, but eventually, you know, they became part of the society. And so much so that just about every town in Australia had a Chinese restaurant with Chinese and Australian meals, and that was, you know, way back in the 1960s. So both in the city and the regional areas, because they've been around for so long and have integrated, I think that's the secret of why the Chinese are so much a part of Australian society. And the key is integration, because we've got now intermarriage. When I was a kid in the 1960s, we were half Chinese, and we were a little bit exotic. That was not the norm. But today, there are so many mixed-race children that the face of Australia is really changing, and I think that's quite a wonderful thing.
Claudia, thank you for talking to us this morning, and Happy New Year. I hope it's a prosperous year for you and your family.
Kung hee fat choy, Angela.